Harihi Om Sahana Vavatu Sahanao Bhunaktu Sahavirayam Karavavahai Tejasvi Navadhitamastama Vidvishavahai Om Shanti 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 Om Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shiva Sadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare
Okay, page 42, chapter 6. Maharaj Parikit passes away. Pratigya. Giving up materialism, one should offer one's love exclusively to the absolute truth and embrace that highest truth in fixed meditation. Dialogue overview. The previous chapter concluded the instructions of Sukadeva Goswami to Maharaj Parikit. In chapter 6, Suta Goswami describes how Maharaj Parikit went back home, back to Godhead. Suta Goswami also answers the question by Shonaka Rishi, who, having heard the Srimad Bhagavatam, now wants to know about other Vedic literatures. Shonaka Rishi asks Suta Goswami question 12.2 of Srimad Bhagavatam. From 12.6.36, Shonaka Rishi said, O gentle Suta, please narrate to us how Pila and other greatly intelligent disciples of Srila Vyasa, who are known as the standard authorities of Vedic wisdom, spoke and edited the Vedas. Suta Goswami answers this question throughout the rest of this chapter and the next. Adhyaya Prakashika. The sixth chapter describes Maharaj Parikit attaining Krishna, the seven sacrifices performed by Janamejaya, and the branches of three Vedas. Sardartha Darshani 12.6.1. After hearing the words of Sri Sukadev, Maharaj Parikit stated that by having listened to the Bhagavatam, which is the compendium of the Puranas, and which is full of the nectarian pastimes of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Lord Uttama Shloka, Parikit had attained the transcendental position of fearlessness and oneness with the Supreme. His ignorance had been dispelled, and by the mercy of Sri Sukadev, he had gained sight of the supremely auspicious personal form of God, namely the Personality of Godhead, Sri Hari. As a result, he had cast aside all fear of death. Sri Parikit Maharaj then begged Sukadev Goswami to permit him to fix his heart upon the lotus feet of Lord Hari and give up his life. Granting this permission, Sri Sukadev rose and departed. Subsequently, Maharaj Parikit, free of all doubts, sat down in yogic posture and merged himself in meditation upon the Supersoul. Then the snake bird Takshaka arrived in the disguise of a Brahmin, bit him, and the body of the saintly king immediately burnt to ashes. Janamejaya, son of Parikit, became very angry when he received news of his father's death, and he began a sacrificial performance for the purpose of destroying all the snakes. Even though Takshaka received protection from Indra, he nevertheless became attracted by the mantras and was about to fall into the fire. Seeing this, Priyaspati, the son of Angira Rishi, came and advised Maharaj Janamejaya that Takshaka could not be killed because he had drunk the nectar of the demigods. Furthermore, Angira said that all living entities must enjoy the fruits of their past activities. Therefore, the king should give up this sacrifice. Janamejaya was thus convinced by the words of Brihaspati and stopped his sacrifice. Thereafter, Suta Goswami, in response to questions from Sri Shonaka, described the divisions of the Vedas. From the heart of the topmost demigod Brahma came the subtle transcendental vibration, and from this subtle sound vibration arose the syllable Om, greatly potent and self-luminous. Using this Omkara, Lord Brahma created the original Vedas and taught them to his sons, Marichi and others, who are all saintly leaders of the Brahmana community. This body of Vedic knowledge was handed down through the disciplic succession of spiritual masters until the end of Dwapara Yuga. when Lord Vyasadeva divided it into four parts and instructed various schools of sages in these four samhitas. Then the sage Yajnavalkya was rejected by his spiritual master. He had to give up all the Vedic mantras he'd received from him. To obtain new mantras of the Yajurveda, Yajnavalkya worshipped the Supreme Lord in the form of the sun god. Sri Suryadev subsequently fulfilled his prayer. Shloka Anusharanam. Summary of verses. Verses 1 to 15, Taksha bites Maharaj Parikit. 16 to 28, Maharaj Janamejaya snake sacrifice. 29 to 35, detachment from materialism. 36 to 80, the origin and division of the Vedas. Verses 1 to 15, Takshika bites Maharaj Parikit. Suta Goswami said, after hearing all that was narrated to him by the self-realized and equipoised Sukadev, the son of Yas, Maharaj Parikit humbly approached his lotus feet. Bowing his head upon the sage's feet, the king, who had lived his entire life under the protection of Lord Vishnu, folded his hands in supplication and spoke as follows. Maharaj Parikit said, I have now achieved the purpose of my life. Because a great and merciful soul like you has shown such kindness to me, you have personally spoken to me this narration of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Hari, who is without beginning or end. I do not consider it at all amazing that great souls such as yourself, whose mind are always absorbed in the infallible personality of Godhead, show mercy to the foolish conditioned souls, tormented as we are by the problems of material life. I have heard from you the Srimad Bhagavatam, which is the perfect summary of all the Puranas, and which perfectly describes the Supreme Lord Uttama Shloka. So it's all amazing that souls like him are giving that mercy. Because souls like Sukadev Goswami, they see everybody connected to the Lord. So they see all souls in their relationship with the Lord. Right? Means that they're all servants. But because of the conditioning, then they act in different ways. But now that conditioning, that itself is not the living entity. Right, we'll have a tendency to identify the conditioning with the living entity. Therefore, we think this person deserves mercy, this person doesn't. Right? But the souls on this level, means in other words, the liberated souls, they don't see like that. They see that the soul is one thing who's transcendental. But because of consciousness, they're not acting in it. Their consciousness is not situated in a transcendental position, though they are. Does that make sense? Mm-hmm. You know, and so then, and whatever we see as the conditioning, that's just the modes of nature. So it's all just parts of the universal form. And that's all being carried out by the Lord's potencies. And so then, the living entity, even though he identifies with it, he's not that. Right? So therefore, then they see all living entities as someone to deserve the Lord's mercy. Mm-hmm. Right? Means, and then we'll see who's receptive. Yes. Right? And so, if someone's receptive, then they make no distinction of what their background is or what their situation is. Then, they speak this transcendental subject matter to the person, but they also speak according to the particular conditioning that that living entity is functioning with. Because that's the medium that he interacts with everyone around him. Does that make sense? Like we see as Sukadev Goswami is always discussing things with Parikit Maharaj based on him being a Kshatriya, but specifically him being in the family lineage of Krishna. That line with Arjuna and the Pandavas and that connection to Krishna. So then he'll always talk about the glory of that particular line. You know, he'll always bring that out because he's a Kshatriya in that position. Because that's the medium that you're talking to that Jiva through. Does that make sense? You know, it's just like, let's say you go to a program, and the program, let's say, is concerning music, right? So, what do you talk to everybody about?
Music,
right? Means that's the whole thing, is that all the living entities are there based on that principle. So that's the topic of discussion. Right? Now, the same people might be found, you know, the next week at a program, you know, whatever it is, at the Guggenheim, and it's all about art. Mm-hmm. Right? Yes. So then you'll talk about art. Mm-hmm. Does that make sense? Mm-hmm. You know, then the next week, you know, you're down there, whatever it is, and, you know, at the horse race, you know, like that. And then you're talking about horses. Does this make sense? That's just how it works. Yes. Right? Even though it's the same people, that's what the topic will be, because that's the basis of the relationship, of the interaction. So, because he's that in that principle as the king, he's dealt with in that principle. So that's how you're dealing with all the living entities. It's not that you're adjusting, you're not adjusting to the external time, place, and circumstance. You're adjusting to the perspective that the living entity is looking at things through.
Right?
So, externally, we interact with other living entities according to their natures, but the tattva that we have, that every jiva, you know, is a part and parcel of Krishna, that is for our advancement of Krishna consciousness. Is that so?
That's there, but by that, having that consciousness, if you see that all living entities are part and parcel of Krishna, then you'll also see to that being discussed with that living entity.
Okay.
You understand? Because otherwise this idea is that, oh, we're discussing that we're at a yoga studio, so we'll just discuss yoga and we won't bring anything up about Krishna consciousness. Then what's the point? You know, why go there? You might as well go down to a, you know, heavy metals concert and talk, you know, how do you call it, Iron Maiden or something. You know, what's the point? You know, you're saying, oh, but it's this, and, you know, we have to break them in easy. It's like, what's the break in? You know what I'm saying? You're using the medium of yoga, but through yoga you explain Krishna consciousness. Because bhakti is the topmost yoga. So why wouldn't you talk about the ladders, yoga ladder and all these things, and about how it moves beyond, how the levels of consciousness and all this. But if you just talk yoga, then they can bring anybody to bring talk about yoga. Why we should be there? And then kirtan, instead of Hare Krishna, we do a Ganesh bhajan. Like any Hindu can do that. Why would we do that? As if the people know Sanskrit and go, oh, this is the Hare Krishna mantra. Only the Hare Krishnas chant that. It's a Vedic mantra. Everybody chants it. You go to Guru Vayur, every night the deity goes out on an elephant procession, like what we do. But every night they do it. And it's for 3 hours. Right? Ours is 1.5. Theirs is double that. And you want to know the fun part? During the whole time, the kirtan is just Hare Krishna mantra. And these are card-carrying, flag-waving, Mayavadi Shankarites. The worship was established by Shankaracharya. And they only chant Hare Krishna. They might have another party that will chant, you know, some kind of bhajans and stuff like that. But one party just chants Hare Krishna. So, where does this Ganesh bhajan come from? Prabhupada went out with people who knew nothing about all these different things, where all these things aren't part of the scene. And he's chanting Hare Krishna. And so now it's a yoga studio, it's yoga, it's India, so therefore they shouldn't have a problem with Hare Krishna, and now we won't chant it because, oh, then we're just forcing upon them. Then don't bother, stay at home. Right? How you'll elevate them by doing a Ganesh bhajan. You know what I'm saying? You know, do some other things. Hari Harai Nama Krishna Jai Radha Madhava, something else. They don't know the words anyway. Right? Hare Krishna mantra has 3 words. They can learn it. The Ganesh bhajan, they can't learn the words. And if they do, what's the point? Why would we be teaching them Ganesh bhajan? You know what I'm saying? All in the name of, quote-unquote, you know, soft preaching, not being, you know, in their face. But they invite you there to present them something. It's theirs culture. Right? You know, is there a problem if the yoga teacher says the asana in Sanskrit? Well, now we're going to do shavasana. Right? No. We have to say, no, it's corpse pose. You know? Yeah? Go to a different yoga studio. Does that make sense? So the point is that you're talking to them through that medium, but they're not the medium. That's why they're the soul, you're the soul, you're both servants of Krishna, so you're discussing about Krishna. But in that medium, if it's a yoga, you're talking in the, about yoga. But didn't Krishna in the 11th canto talk a lot about yoga? You know, so you talk that. You can say, oh, but that's so elevated. No, that's the stuff you can talk. It's so elevated, they don't have an opinion. That's the point. It's just pure Vedanta. They don't have an opinion on Vedanta. Right? You're not going to go in there and then someone's Noah, they follow Jaimini and this one follows Patanjali and this one's, you know, Vaisheshika. They don't have that. You just talk that and they're cool. They go, wow, that's logical. And they appreciate it. And it works. But you just use the language and the tone of voice and all that that yogis like. You don't necessarily have to go to the whole point of talking in the soft and all. You don't have to do that, but you can if you like. Mm-hmm. Does that make sense? Yeah. So it's just a matter of cutting through the nonsense and getting to the soul. Yes. But if we're enamored by the nonsense, then of course we'll never get around to the soul. So that's the whole point. That's why we're supposed to preach as Madhyamas, not as Kanistas. Kanistas don't have the faith. They're worried about this and that and the social prestige and position and all that. Who cares? You go there and nobody likes. At least they heard about Krishna. Right? And so that eternal benefit will be there. That Agyata Sukriti. It'll build up. But if you go there and, you know, for months and months you've never brought anything up about spiritual, what benefit have they gotten? Why? Because you're worried, oh, but we'll displease them and they won't invite us back. But you haven't done them any benefit. The benefit is cutting through. But you do it according to their nature, so therefore it's not disturbing. But in the name of not disturbing, we don't present the absolute truth, then why we should be there? You know, there's plenty of guys in Haridwar and Hrishikesh and Varanasi and all these places in Naimisharanya who can come there and they'll give a much better lecture because they are materialists. You know, and they'll talk Sanskrit and talk all Bhagavad Gita and do all that kind of stuff. But we won't do it. But they'll talk Bhagavad Gita but not give the conclusion of bhakti. And we won't talk Bhagavad Gita or give the conclusion of bhakti. So what's the point? Yes. So, therefore, it's not amazing because they just see the soul. They don't see, they see the conditioning because you can tell, but that's not the thing. It's just like you talk to the person, and you can see they're in a suit, so you talk in one way. You know, you see that they're in, you know, whatever it is, some street clothes, and you talk in a different way. But you're talking to the person, right? Even on the material platform. But here they're talking to the soul. Right? And then the Bhagavatam is a perfect summary of all the Puranas. Why? Because it has all the same stories, but it's giving the essence in connection to Krishna consciousness. That's that's the direct thing. None of the other Puranas do that. It's all about Krishna consciousness, but they don't directly say this. Does that make sense? My Lord, now I have no fear of Takshaka or any other living being, or even of repeated deaths, because I have absorbed myself in that purely spiritual, absolute truth, which you have revealed and which destroys all fear. Right? So, being fearless means you've given up all material desire. Yes. If there's no material desire, there's no fear. Fear comes from material desire. Yes.
Watch, we see some preachers, they have the culture and the knowledge to preach to different, you know, kinds of people,
as you
described previously.
Right.
But some, they can, because their background, they can preach to just to a certain very limited, let's say,
group. Yeah.
Group.
Yeah, yeah, that's fine.
And sometimes, because they're successful in that field, they think they can expand unlimited and go in here and there, and it's not working, and they're confused and people unhappy.
Right.
So how can we adjust?
It's just a matter of explaining that they're, due to their conditioning, you know, their experience, they can work within a particular conditioning. So the point is it's not volume that makes success. It's Krishna consciousness that makes success. So, like both Srila Prabhupada and Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur made the point, if one person becomes fully Krishna conscious,
yes. Yeah.
From the whole mission, they'll consider it a success. Right? In other words, it's so dear to Krishna that somebody takes up pure devotional service, that even if one person does that, they'll consider all the effort worthwhile. So that's the standard. Now we try to do that on as grand a scale as we can, but the point is if you can just deal with one group, like let's say someone deals with just those who are into metal, so just stick to that and be happy. Don't worry about volume, just worry about the effect. Right? Because anyway, metal is a small group, it's not a big group. You know, it's not like Katy Perry or something, right? You know, so it's just a small group. So that group, you deal with them and you inspire them. And so you can go to all the places where they have the big concerts and this and that and talk to those people, and you know where they hang out in the park, go down and talk to them there and be happy. And, you know, it's if opportunity is there to do other things and there's nothing to do here with your metal group, then you go and deal with them. But don't take it that because I'm doing this, it should work everywhere else, because it won't. Like that. The point is to be effective. Like, just, and we may say, no, but it's volume. Okay, let's look at another example. Let us say, okay, we're dealing in medicine. Okay, medicine's a very broad field. Okay, so within medicine, now, then there's so many disciplines. So which one do you take? Because you're not necessarily going to be successful in all of them, right? Someone who's good in allopath is not necessarily going to be good in Ayurveda or in Chinese medicine or, how you say, aromatherapy or, some kind of shiatsu massage. You understand? They're going to have an area. They pick an area. So let's say they go into allopath, right? So they'll do their general degree. And then after that, they'll do their internship and then they'll specialize. Now, they can just be a general practitioner and, you know, take care of families and this and that and the regular stuff that, you know, wide range, but within families. You know, that's what they do. So they don't go to they don't necessarily work at big hospitals and that. They run a clinic or they run a little, you know, something and take care of those individuals. Right? So they're not going to reach everybody. Now, let's say you specialize more. Someone goes into, you know, neurobrain surgery. Right? How many of them are there? How many people do you deal with? Very minimal, but they're considered higher. Does that make sense? So it's not, one doesn't have to, if one's approach is a social prestige, that one specializes, it's fine. Not we're saying that it's better. We're just saying it's fine. Why worry that I'm only dealing with this group and others are dealing with other groups, I should also deal? No. If you can, great. If you can't, don't. And you see that's just the way people are. Either their background or their Krishna consciousness or whatever arrangement it is. Does that make sense? We just deal in the areas where we are successful. And that's enough for Krishna. Right? Krishna's not saying, yes, only the big monkeys throwing in the mountaintops are dear to me, and all these squirrels and other things like that tossing in the dust. What's the dust doing? He never says that. Right? Other preachers might say that, but Krishna never says that. So that's the whole thing, is that what is to know who you are. Right? We know we're the soul and we're trying to get that, but we're working within this conditioned nature. And so then you have to know what you can do, what limit you can do. You know, both how much physically you can do, mentally you can do, all these different things like that.
Yes.
And work within that group. And you can't worry about beyond that. You can appreciate others working in these areas and that, but you yourself can't worry. Does that make sense?
Yeah, the difficulty is that devotees, they know philosophy and they say, by karma, I'm limited. I have my, you know, like ceiling, that which
right.
I can't cross beyond that.
Right.
But because Krishna consciousness is unlimited and ever-expanding, then following in that same logic, I can expand all the time.
If it happens naturally. But the point is you see what the results are. You know, it's just like we were saying, we're dealing in one particular style of preaching, and it was working very well with the straight edge. They loved it. But when we went back into we were out in upstate New York, when we went back down to Boston, then the people who came to the program were not hardcore, though they look exactly like hardcore. But they were emos. And they were unhinged by it. The host had to spend 5 hours discussing with them to put them back, you know, where they felt okay. You know, because they looked the same, they asked the same kind of question, they seemed, had the same attitude. But they're not the same. You know, they're emos for a reason. They like it to be more emotional and more, you know, stuff like that. So I didn't know there was two groups. You know, then you find out. So either if you can switch and then talk in that other way, that they're happy, great. If not, stick to the one group. Let someone else preach to the other group. You know, it's not that if someone's going there to that, they'll be the lead preacher. You can go and help. Right? Because it's not that one guy goes and does everything. You can go and play kartals or mridanga or help set up or do, you know, just to be one of the chorus and the singing or, you know, stuff like that. Or, you know, answer questions afterwards when you talk to the crowd and serve a shot or like that. Why do you have to be lead? You're lead in one, but in the next you're not. That has to be accepted. It was an interesting thing with the kids. Because, you know, Prabhupada said that how does one man teach hundreds of kids? He teaches the older, they teach the younger. It's a Vedic system. Right? Is that if you're learning something and then you're teaching to the next group down, you actually learn more. So now if we go to state schools, you don't see this. I mean, absolutely don't see this. Only when you start going to, university, if you're aware, you might notice it.
Yes.
But you'll only really see it when you get to the postgraduate. Mm-hmm. Right? That's where you definitely are aware of it.
Yes.
Because you're being engaged like that.
Yes.
You're going for your master's. You're able to, you know, tutor in that those who are doing the undergraduate.
Yes.
And even within the undergraduate, depending upon the discipline and all that, then they have their senior students, you know, like the third, fourth year, teaching those in the first, second year. But you won't see it till there. If you go to private schools, that are especially boarding schools, you'll see it right from the beginning. But otherwise, most people don't see that. Right? So then it's not understood that that's a normal system. Even in the Western, it's considered a higher system, so the general public won't see it. But the Vedic system, that's where it starts. You come in, you don't know anything, but as soon as you know something, then you're teaching the ones that don't know anything. And you're learning from ones above you, and like this, it just moves up. So then in that system, we would be having different students would be, specializing in different areas. So someone's better at English, someone's better at math, someone's better at philosophy, someone's better at mantras, like that. And so I remember seeing it struck me, that's where it struck me, I'm giving from this example, that you had this group of kids, that they were all the same, basically, group. And then one of them is teaching one of the classes. Then when the class ended, then all that happened was everybody just shifted position so that instead of facing the one that was doing the English, now they faced the one that was doing the math. So the math tutor was a student to the tutor in English. And now the English tutor is a student of the math tutor. Like that. And then when you have the mantra class, then it's a completely different person. And they have no problem with it because they just grow up in it. Right? So that's the advantage of the Vedic cultural system, is you can understand your position and what you can do. You know, just like, okay, you're a Brahmin. Yes, the Brahmin's the top, but the Brahmin doesn't tell everybody what to do. He gives advice. There's a difference. Because telling him what to do means you're in charge. Giving advice meaning you're the leading personality. But what they do, that's up to them. So the Brahmins are the top, but they don't tell the Kshatriyas what they do. They advise them. And then the Kshatriyas either take it or don't. You know, and if they regularly don't take it, why advise that Kshatriya? Go find a different one. Right? And even though the Kshatriya is making the decision, doing the work, so actually he's in charge, but he respects the Brahmins for their good advice. You'll find this in the Vedic system, but in the non-Vedic systems, you basically just, it's there occasionally, but generally you never see it. The top guy's got to be the one that tells everybody what to do. He gives the advice on everything. He's everything on everything. And it's a problem because nobody's that good. And even if they are that good, no professional person would do that because you can't oversee everything all the time. So they would delegate and other people would take these areas and they would just discuss with them how it's going and give some direction. But they would make the on-the-site decisions. Because as soon as you micromanage, then you just stifle the whole thing. Nothing functions. But you feel good because you feel I did something, I'm in charge, I told everybody what to do. But in reality, nothing happens. And in the, as devotees like to say, the real world, they'll never do that. The first thing to go, if a company's tanking, the first thing to do is get rid of the micromanager. First thing. Just go in there, get rid of the guy. Whatever it takes. Then bring in somebody who actually knows how to lead. Because micromanagers aren't leaders. Right?
Urmila Mataji, she was given a seminar just recently.
Right.
And she explained four levels, you know, of leadership.
Mm-hmm.
And she called what you call, you know, micromanagers. She called them street-level bureaucrats.
Yeah. Bureaucrat is that's at best. And we're not even talking top. We're talking street-level.
Yeah, street-level means lower level.
Yeah, yeah.
So it's like a supervisor, that's all.
Yeah, because he's right there. He has to make that management. You can't claim to be the top and oversee and all that and be in that mentality. Because the point is it's the supervisor that gets down to all the little detail.
Exactly.
But above him,
it's two more levels.
Yeah.
Means the Brahman and the Kshatriya.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, so it's just not viable. No one uses it. I don't know where people get the idea that this is actually something that goes on in the quote-unquote real world. Because it doesn't. It really just doesn't. So that's the thing. Know what you can do. Like I remember one devotee was telling me his father was military. You know, professional. Like, or not professional, I think they say career. Right? Career military. And, you know, he had been there a long time and he's very qualified, so they always wanted to move him up. So he's, you know, sergeant means you're there with the men.
Yeah.
And they wanted to move up into the higher, you know, the, what do you call it? It's a name for it. The officers, they're in a different group. Sergeants are officers, but there's above them, you know, colonels and all those kind of guys. But he didn't want to move up because he felt most comfortable there, right down with the men. You know, he's telling them what to do. He's there with them doing it. And so he just stayed there. You know, even though he did a full life, normally he'd move right up, right? You know, you're there for a long time. So you just know what you're good at and stick to it. Why go into something else and not be good at it? Right? I think in the it's an old thing. I don't even know if they use it anymore. But someone came out with a book on it, I think back in the 70s or 80s, called The Peter Principle. That someone rises up to their, in the system, they rise up to their level of incompetence. You know, you won't rise any more than your incompetence. Right? Means you're good at something. Because you're good, they move you up. And they'll keep moving you up until you become incompetent or useless. And that's where you stop. You know, and then because you're incompetent, after a while they'll get rid of you. Right? Well, if you stayed at a level that you're actually competent at, you can do that your whole life and everyone will be happy. Does that make sense? You know, so you don't end up being that 50th, you know, executive vice president who actually has absolutely nothing to do. So it's just the natural system. So the Vedic system then allows for this. It's natural.
Right? So Mark, coming back to the education point, at what time, say, student can teach, you know, younger students? What is the time range? It's
just a matter of whenever they themselves are stable in that particular aspect. Because the point is, let's say you're helping someone with first grade, you know, math. Just as an example. You have to know first grade math. So that means you can be in second grade. Mm-hmm. You know, one may say, oh no, but this, that, and so many things. Yeah, you can say all those things. But, yes, okay, let's say that they go through and they do their 12 years and then they do their undergraduate and then they specialize in their education and all that. Okay? But how long has it been since they did first grade math?
Many years.
And how much can they relate to a first grader having gone through math, you know, up to... Yeah, that's exactly the problem. So say what you want. It's very right. And the example is, that I always can give, is think of your schooling from, you know, grade 1 to grade 12. And in that, you'll have gone through huge amount of teachers, right? Right? Because, you know, 6-8 subjects a day, each one a different teacher. And then over those years and everything like that. How many of them do you remember that you actually feel this was a teacher?
One or two.
Yeah. My third grade teacher, you know? And then the 7 through 12, the wood shop teacher, metal shop teacher. And I remember in 12th grade, the person who did art or poetry. And that's it. You know, but actually as a academic teacher, only one. Because you see, all the other ones are art, so generally they're a little more passion. Yes. Like that. My mother sent me something the other day. It was, what do you call it? Obituary? Is that when someone dies, right?
Yes.
Of somebody who was a teacher that I had gone to. And I don't even remember the teacher. I didn't even recognize that he was my teacher. But I got the idea from it that he must have been. Because it was at the same school and everything like that. Then, it mentioned in there that he had a passion in Shakespeare. And this would sit down and go through like that. And of all those years of any academics, the only thing I something remember is the discussions that were going on about Shakespeare. I didn't even know that it was him. But he had an effect because that was it. You know, in academics. And I don't even remember him. Then the third grade teacher I remember because he was just, you know, good teacher, very personal and this and that. That's the point. Say what you want. Just, oh, but unless you have all these degrees, you can't. No, you know the subject, you can teach it. And because the second grader just did first grade last year, he knows all the problems that the first grader dealt with. And so he can explain it. He've learned it. That means he can explain it. Then whatever he can't explain, then he has the third grade one to help him. Right? He's learned more mass, so it'll be easier for him. And at the same time, it's not so much distance. It's the Vedic system. It works. You know, we may have our angles on all these things and all that, but ultimately, what does it matter? It's Krishna's laws of nature, not ours. You know what I'm saying? That's the thing. We have our opinions, and then there's reality. You know? You know what I'm saying? So Shastra mentions something, the Acharyas mention something, that's reality. Then we have our opinions, and it really just doesn't matter. Nobody cares. We and our, you know, 2-3 acquaintances may care. But the modes of nature don't care. Material energy doesn't care. You know? Time goes on. Say what we want. And time goes on. Yes.
Can we say now that teaching is part of studying?
Teaching is naturally part of studying. Because mm-hmm. when you know something, then you teach it. That's how you actually learn. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, even in the Karmi studies, they did a thing, I think, if you just hear only, generally you'll retain 30%. Mm-hmm. If you hear and see mm-hmm. something, you know, like a presentation, mm-hmm. you may remember 50%. If you see, hear, and take notes, so the notes seems to be the most important, you remember 70%. Yes. Prabhupada recommended taking notes, because you hear. Yes. And I remember also my mother telling me that if somebody's talking, if you can see the person talking, yes. you'll retain more than if you can't see them.
Yes.
Like that, because you see the mood, you see the movements, you know. It just creates more of a samskar. Well, if you just hear the voice, you'll catch stuff. But when you see how they deal and everything like that, then that you retain more. So then doing that and then taking notes, then you get 70%. But it says if you teach that same body of knowledge, you retain 90%. So therefore, you know, being in class, taking notes, and then teaching others, that's the most effective. And that's the Vedic system. Prabhupada said everyone should take notes. And then he also said, you know, you should teach. So we already have the topmost system. But because it hasn't come from the mouth of professionals, you know, how you say, then we don't take it seriously. The crow-like mouth of professionals. Yes.
In Yamuna Mataji's cookbook, she said that Prabhupada told her wife, if you don't teach how to cook, you will lose your ability.
Yeah, if you don't teach cooking, you lose your ability. Yeah. What you also see is that, like in homes, like the you know, the ladies in the house are such good cooks, in traditional houses, right? And then by that principle you said, who's the best cook, right? The grandmother. Right, and then after that, the mother, then the daughter. Quite, because grandmother's teaching both them, and the mother's teaching, you know, like this. So because they're teaching, that's why. Otherwise, the theory you know very nicely, but then when it comes to it, you know, it's just yeah, very good. Yes, sir.
I think Srila Prabhupada, Tamal Krishna Maharaj, once came to him and said, "I don't have time to study because you know I'm so busy with you know other services." And then Prabhupada looked at him and said that giving 15 minutes plus equals 2 hours of study.
Mm. Yeah, very nice. Very good. Yeah, because you're having to actually think about it. You can read for 2 hours, you may not actually contemplate it. But if you give class, you have to think about it. And then people ask questions. Right?
And then you really know what you know.
Yes, yes, that's how you know. Many of our boys also, that's how they figured out they knew something. Because they're in the school for, you know, 10, 12 years. And then they think they know nothing. Because it's absorbed so naturally, just by the association, that's the main thing. That they don't know how much they actually know. And so when they go out, you know, in the greater ISKCON society, and then, you know, because they age, they ask them to give a class or something like that, Then they find they can give the class very easily. People ask questions. Doesn't matter what the question, they can give an answer. All the other things that are going on in the temple that they know how to do. You know, they can cook, they can do the puja, they're managing, you know, kids since they're small. They can do all these things. Then only they figure out, oh, I know something. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, it's very common they think they don't know anything. Because they learn these things, but they don't gain an attitude that I'm special in learning it. Right? Just like if you do an MBA course in 18 months, the material they teach you may or may not be useful in business. Because the business community will change, you know, after, you know, 6 months, a year anyway. So the particular algorithms and that won't they? Principles, of course, will stay. But how many catch the principles in that? But the most important thing is that you learn there's 18 months of an attitude that you're an MBA, you're special. You know how to do these things. And because of that, you'll get others will listen to you. Right? The knowledge you know, they may know more than you, but you have the attitude. Right? So that's the thing. In the modern, it's all about attitude. On the Vedic, it's also all about attitude, like being humble. So that doesn't seem to jive in the, you know, the modern materialistic social environment. But those who are actually successful in their professionalism, they respect that. They actually do. You means people won't know, but they'll do. I remember talking to one big top musician, you know, one of those, you know, top five sitar players in India kind of thing. And so then he was talking about music and this and that, and because we were talking about the devotional and all that. He said, yes, there was one singer like that. Everybody considered him a sadhu. And he was like the best. But no one will know his name in that. They know him. Because he wouldn't make a show. You know how when they sing, you know, they're waving their arms and doing all kinds of stuff and, you know, doing tricks and all that, you know, like you see always the Bombay Wallahs, and they'll hold a note for forever until people clap. You notice as soon as they clap, they stop singing the note. You know, they'll go, ah, like that. That's what they'll do. You always see it. At least two or three times in one performance. No? Yeah. The Bombay Wall is laughing a lot. It's just like that. So they make a show. People remember them. But this guy was saying, this guy, he would just sit there. He'd have his eyes closed. He wouldn't move. He would just sit and he would sing amazing stuff. So all the other musicians would learn from him. Even they're not singers or sitar players or whatever, they would catch music from this guy. So amongst those who are, they would respect him, though the general public wouldn't. But the point is you're trying to catch the top, being Guru and Krishna. So, you know, and the senior Vaishnav. So if they're happy, what does it matter if the mass are or not? Does that make sense? You know, Sukadeva Goswami, how many people recognized him? They didn't recognize. Only when he came into very elevated souls, and they saw, oh, you know, or Dhanvantari. He's walking through the crowd. No one notices him except for Yadu Maharaj. He saw, here's a liberated soul. Right? You know, so like that is that. There is, the point is, we have to always remember, we are selling diamonds, not glass. Now, if you can, like the, who are those guys? The Boers in SA? The Boers in SA with the diamond?
De Beers?
Yeah, De Beers. Like that. They've made diamonds very popular. But, because previously, you know, means nowadays, is, you know, an engagement ring is always a diamond. But previously, they'd be emeralds, rubies, something else. Diamonds weren't considered, technically, they're not the top jewel. They're much more common. In fact, they have to keep stock of stuff and not let it out on the market, otherwise the price will go right down. In other words, it would in the boutiques it would be Tesco price. You know, So it comes down, you mark it down by a tenth, you know, I mean, to a tenth. So they've somehow or another made it popular. So that's great. But the point is it's still a diamond. Right? So the whole point is that you have the diamonds. They've made something that's not necessarily popular. But it's still a diamond price. So the same way as Krishna consciousness, for those who are willing to buy spiritual diamonds. But you find a way to get it through to that person. And that's where, you know, he's saying before, someone is good at getting through to this group of persons, and then someone else to that group. And as long as you get it through, that's why it's Samkirtana. Samkirtan doesn't mean I do everything. Samkirtan means all of us together make the complete whole. Not that aham pur namadah pur. It doesn't start off like that. It starts off with om. Okay? The om is the purnam, not aham. Right? Does that work? Yeah. So it's just a matter of, for humble and just see what we can do, we do. And you try new areas, it doesn't mean you don't. But if you see it successful, great. And if it's not, then don't. Stick to the area where you can. It means don't try these new areas and give up the area where you are good at. Yes. It's a matter of your area is not keeping you busy and you're so successful. Then you start trying, and then you can say, okay, it may take some time to develop. But it's the principle of what you're doing in the one is what has to be brought across to the other. Not the detail. It's the principle. So that's why I was saying preaching is about the principle. You're preaching the principle. And then you're expressing it in the detail of the particular audience. Right? You don't preach secondary. You don't preach yoga. You preach, you know, how you say, Vedanta. You may explain it through yoga, but you're explaining Vedanta. My Lord, I now have no fear of Takshaka or any other living being, or even of repeated deaths, because I have absorbed myself in that purely spiritual absolute truth. Right? Because if he's on the absolute platform, he doesn't care if he takes birth again here, goes to spiritual world, because he's absorbed in the Lord. Wherever he is, he will serve the Lord. Which you have revealed, and which destroys all fear. Right? So he's not saying, I'm so fabulous. He's saying, by the grace of the spiritual master. Right? That's always.
He has full realization.
In other words, by studying Bhagavatam up to here, we could have full realization. But, you know, attachments, we still have the fear, so we don't necessarily move forward. But you'll see is that, what's there, we've definitely developed from what position we were in before.
Yes.
So that's the whole point. We keep always hearing and chanting about Srimad Bhagavatam. We will advance.
Yes.
You know, there's no doubt. That's one of the symptoms of Baba Bhakti, is that one has no doubt that the system will work. Mm-hmm. Krishna is the absolute truth. I'm a servant. And we act in that capacity, it will work. We will develop love for Krishna. It just may take us however much time due to our attachment, but it will work. Oh, Brahmana, please give me permission to resign my speech and the functions of all my senses unto Lord Adhoksaja. Allow me to absorb my mind, purified of lusty desires, within him and thus give up my life. Right? So in other words, you'll pull in all the senses and just focus on the Lord. Right? You have revealed to me that which is most auspicious, the supreme personal feature of the Lord. I am now fixed in knowledge and self-realization. My ignorance has been eradicated. Right? So he's fixed in knowledge and self-realization. But what's been revealed is beyond that knowledge and self-realization, it is the supreme personal feature of the Lord. That's the whole point. That's why Jnana Yoga, you see, Krishna makes the difference. In the Jnana Yoga, the knowledge that's there is very valuable in Krishna consciousness, but it itself is not the topmost knowledge of Krishna consciousness. So then that knowledge has to be resigned to Krishna. When you come to the liberated platform, it's not about seeing things on the liberated platform. It's about seeing things connected to the person. Right? And the more you see according to the person, the quicker that path of knowledge goes. Jnana Yoga goes quicker because of the personal understanding. Does that make sense? So even if someone is focused on the personal, even without Jnana Yoga or Karma, they can move forward very nicely. But if someone has that intellectual aspect, then that's the natural way to engage the intellect in the mode of goodness. Right? Because it will situate you on the transcendental platform. But being there, then it's about the person, Krishna, that's the real, realization. That's the real thing. You know, as Bhaktivinoda Thakur says, the really real thing. Right? So that means he's the cause of all causes. That ultimate position, that's what you're trying to get to.
So this is what the Guru and Acharya are teaching.
Yes. They're teaching that, but they're teaching it through the methods of karma and jnana yogas, like Krishna says, the Gita, the yoga ladder.
Yes.
What happened to that other one? Oh, somebody's taking it away. So, that yoga ladder is that depending upon where one's situated, that's the medium you use. So if someone's just their physical, then you talk about karma yoga. But you're talking about Krishna the person, how you engage all your senses and all your activities and all your results for Krishna. You know, you don't necessarily have to point out so much of the negative, other than if you're so attached to the material karma that you can't take up spiritual karma, then you'll talk about the negative. So in other words, the jnana yoga is used enough to get you to do karma. Then by doing karma, you get purified, so knowledge and detachment come. Then that knowledge and detachment becomes more of the drive to be absorbed in Krishna. Because the material world, you know, has no value in this and that, unless it's connected to Krishna and, you know, like that. So then you go more than that is that, and the real thing is this, it's all Krishna, it's Krishna's energies. As Krishna is doing all, so you can see Krishna at all points. So all of them are to bring you to understand the person. So at all levels of the yoga ladder, then it's all about the person. Like that. You know, so Krishna is saying, I'm the light of the sun and the moon. So therefore, by seeing the sun and the moon, you should remember the person, Krishna. He is the taste of water. So drinking water, you remember Krishna. Right, it's not about the technical point that he's the sun and moon and how he's the sun and moon. That will be there as that the next step from karma, you may look at that. But that's not the end of the ladder. Bhakti's the end. So then it's about Krishna the person, pleasing Krishna the person. Does that make sense? So that's the whole point that he's revealed, the most auspicious supreme personal feature of the Lord. So that's the aspect that we're trying to get to.
So, Jnana Yoga basically speaks about the Aishwarya of the Lord. And
Jnana Yoga speaks about the Aishwarya, yes.
Yeah, and when experience or realize the supreme personal feature of the Lord, that means the sweetness of the Lord. That is what is the aim, that is the goal.
Mm-hmm.
However, when we say about the Vaikuntha Lokas and all, then for them they continue to maintain that Aishwarya.
They can continue to make the Aishwarya, but they add that element that the personal sweetness of the Lord. But that personal sweetness is an aspect of Aishwarya. But in Braj, the sweetness overpowers, so there is no Aishwarya. You know, but because of the sweetness, it already contains that affection for Krishna as a person, that he can be God and have expanded all the universes, and that doesn't take away from his being.
Yes.
You know what I'm saying? It doesn't matter.
Mm-hmm.
Does that make sense?
Yes. Can we also say that when Krishna is absent, then this Jnana Yoga helps in remembering him more? And
when you say absent, what do you mean by Krishna's absent?
I'm talking of the Gokul pastimes, wherein
The Gokul pastime. No, how does that? How does that work?
Absent means, you know, like, he goes to the pastures with the cows, and then, like, you know, Mother Yashoda is...
No, Mother Yashoda is just thinking about her son and what he's going to cook for when he comes home in the evening, and making new clothes for him, new ornaments for him, and cleaning the house and making all those arrangements. It means, in other words, don't try to take our level of sadhana and place that on the eternal associates. We always have to understand gyan's not the top.
Yeah, it is not the top.
Yeah, so then why would you be imposing that upon them? They just remember the person. That makes sense? Yeah? Because it's not jnana, it's just, they're just remembering Krishna. It's just a matter of udipan. It's all within rasa. So it switches.
Yeah, udipan.
Yeah.
So Maharaj, you need some mercy to come to that level.
Yes, so that's the whole point. Is that's why we always want to hear from the acharyas. They're on that level. That's why what they say is important. What we think and what others say in the ordinary sense is not important. We may say, but everybody in the world thinks like this. For one, everybody does not think like that. That's an illusion. And two, what does it matter even if they did? You know, Prabhupada's given the point. A million fools can say something wrong is right. That doesn't change his position. You know, just because everybody thinks that, you know, how you say, all these things are important, material things are important. You know, like we have a show of opulence. What does that mean? People take it that you're established. Like we saw, Kali Yuga, one of the things, if there's money, then they think that you're together. Why was Francis of Assisi not appreciated? He didn't have anything. He was a total beggar. Like that. And he didn't even try to get any money, so no one took him seriously. You know what I'm saying? But the Pope, now they take him seriously. Right? Does that make sense? You know, you wanted to, if you want to, you know, let's say you wanted to auction the Sistine Chapel. How much would that cost? Right? It's probably the most expensive building on the planet. So people respect the Pope. If he was sitting under a tree like Francis of Assisi, no one would care. That's what Prabhupada told the you know, he said in Hong Kong, and he said in here in Mayapur. You know, the journalist comes, you know how journalists has to find poke holes and things. He said, you know, if they can't find something negative, they don't have a story, right? Yeah. So they came and were saying, you know, but you know, you're a sadhu and all that, and you're, you know, all, you have all this opulence and that, you know, because that time the long building, lotus building, so many things were there. And Prabhupada said, if Bhaktivedanta Swami sat down under a tree next to the Ganga, it says, you would not be here having this interview. You're only here because we have these buildings. Yes. They can't say anything, because it's a fact. In Hong Kong, they came there, and the Hindu community, they put Prabhupada in the, I think at that time, the Hilton Hotel was the best hotel, and they put him on the top floor in the presidential suite, you know? Which for a community of businessmen is not a very expensive thing, but whatever it is. So the journalist comes and, you know, is also, you know, you're a Swami, how is it, this, that, and things like that. He said, if this building, because I think it was the 24th floor, he said, this building was made out of solid gold, it actually wouldn't be enough to reciprocate with the transcendental knowledge or the opportunity the soul gets of getting out of the material world and going back to the spiritual world. In other words, receiving knowledge about Krishna, it wouldn't be enough to reciprocate. You know, so what are you talking about? You know, like that. But they were there. That's the point. If he was just in some little motel, no one would be there. You know, in Australia, then they picked up Prabhupada in a Rolls Royce. You know, and so then they put his cap said, you know, Swami rolls in, you know, from the Rolls Royce, you know. A pun on that. And it's an article. That's the thing. Because of this, it's an article. You know, and then there's other aspects. They appreciate other aspects, and so there's there. You got that? But the point is that there's facility people notice. That's why we built such a big... Do we need that big temple to do a kirtan? No. You just have a big shed without a kirtan. You know what I'm saying? That's the whole...
Big class here.
Yeah, you just like that. You just like that. But... You know, and you see, as in Jiva Dharma, the sadhus there just having a kirtan and the clearing in the trees, you know, like that, and they're just that's all you require. But because we have that building, people from all over India, all over the world, will come to see. Then when they come to see, they're going to see Krishna. They're going to hear Krishna's name. So it's the way you engage, right? But the point is it's still our terms.
Yes.
It's not their terms.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? Because one can say, oh, yes, but according to this, then that means we have to do things like they do. No, you have to do the principle like they do. But that principle comes from the Veda. Otherwise, why are they doing it? The Veda is what works. They don't know the detail of the Veda. But somehow or another, they still have some understanding of a principle. Right? So in other words, they're dressing, let's say for example, they're dressing like a gentleman. They're wearing their suit. You know, and whatever is going on in their community, one button, two button, three button, whatever it is, double breath, they're wearing that. Right? So you know that they're, you know, there. But let's say you have some older guy, you know, 80 years old, he comes to Sampro because he's very respected. He's going to wear the suit from back when his suit was in fashion. But what's good? But it's going to the level of the principle of, you know, being a gentleman in dress and how he carries it will be the same, right? So you may not have that, you know, modern, you know, how you say the button is so tight at your waist that it's about to pop, you know, that kind of thing to show off your waist. He'll have the more baggy kind of thing, but it's, you know, it's all done properly. He's worn properly. He carries himself properly, so they'll all respect him. You know what I'm saying? And then the devotee comes along, dresses the devotee, dressed nicely. The people will respect. This idea is, oh no, unless you wear what they wear. So you're gonna go out there and you're gonna spend $5,000 on a suit. Spend $5,000-$6,000 on a suit. Then they may notice that, okay, this guy's got a good suit. What has he got to say? If you really want to impress him, you need one of those $10,000-$12,000. And there's ones that are more. You can go up to $25,000-$30,000. Hand-sewn, super, you know, far-out stuff. When you walk in with one of those, everybody knows. But we're going to do that? No, we just wear our own clothes nicely. And then we're good. We don't have to compete in their area. It's the Vedic principle, be a gentleman. Right? So that's the whole point. That's the Vedic thing, is anybody can be a gentleman. Even the simple villager, his dhoti is clean, he wears it nicely. They know he doesn't have much money, but they can see he dresses as a gentleman. So it's accepted. Does that make sense? Yeah, because it's about what we say that's the most important. Like that. Because otherwise, if you have the suit and you don't say anything worthwhile, no one will listen to you anymore. And now you've wasted $5,000. What? Yeah. Yeah.
No, sometimes the difficulty is to accept us as we are.
Yes, but that's part of the process. Self-realization means knowing what who you are as a soul, what your actual nature is, and then on the platform that's the constitutional. So when we talk about Atma, it has four definitions, mm-hmm. right? So the soul, that's the constitutional. Yes. Then in conditional, you have the physical, the mental, and intellectual, yes. or sensual.
Yes. Yes.
Right? Then you know what physically you can do, what emotionally you can deal with. You know what sensually and intellectually you can deal with. You know, or depending on what it is, put the sensual in with the mind, and then you just know what level you deal with and function there. Don't worry beyond that. So that's self-realization. So it goes back to your question. Is that it's just a matter of self-realization. Knowing who you are, what you can do. You know, there's what you'd like to do, and then there's the reality.
Maybe different.
Yeah, but it might be different. So the whole point is if we went by what we actually are, we have very minimal problems.
Yes.
We go by what we think we are, because we're not, we're going to get trouble from everybody.
Yes.
You know, the guy thinks he's the manager and he's not, it'll create so much trouble. Like I told that one story of that person before, he was working in kind of the Vaishya environment, in cows. But thinking about it now, you could see, you know, his actual nature. But at that time, but it wouldn't have been obvious because he was so expert in cows, technically everything about them. Right? But I remember once he tried to grow potatoes in the back field. It didn't work. Right? Even though the local, you know, guy with, you know, no education could do it. That should have been the first symptom. But no one cared about cows or farming. Like that. So then he saw that what everybody cares about is management. So he tried to be a manager. That was even more disastrous. And this and that. So he got frustrated and was, you know, out on his own for a while. And, you know, he got a job as a teacher. And he's been doing that for the last, you know, 25 years. Right? So he had Brahminical nature, but he was trying to be socially out in the front.
Yes.
You know, the Vaishya's got the money, and so in an environment where the money is the thing, it worked. But then when he found it wasn't that, then he tried to go for the influence. That didn't work. But he was a teacher. So if he just accepted that from the beginning, then he would have already been nicely situated, because he was working with us in the Gurukul. But he didn't see himself as a teacher, he saw himself as a manager.
Yes.
And so by that, then, you know, he thinking he's a manager and someone else thinking they're a manager, then, you know, when you have two forest fires, they burn each other out. So like that, that both disappeared. Well, if you just understood, I'm a teacher, and just get down there with the kids, no prestige, just teaching the kids, he would have been fine. But it took him another, you know, 5-10 years to figure that out. But then when he figured it out, he's been doing that ever since. So that's the thing. You know your nature. It works nicely.
Mm-hmm.
You can say we're not the body. We're not. But this is what we have. You know, I'm not the grater, but it only grates potatoes and stuff. I can't, you know, how you say, julienne the carrots with my grater. It's not going to happen. You know, or I can't use it to mash the potatoes. You know, boil the potatoes, put them in the pot, take the grater, and then try to smush them with it. Not going to happen. You know? Or put the grater on the fire and then try to, you know, grill the eggplant or something. You know, it's not going to work out. Except,
yeah. It's very common that devotees also do not know about their natures.
Because they don't try. They just work it out. We're not this body and just write the whole thing off. Why not? We're not the body, but it doesn't mean that we can't be intelligent enough to observe what the body is and mm-hmm. what it can do. So we know what the limit is.
Mm.
And then that's what works. You know? Mm. That's the Vedic system, is everybody works in the area that they excel in. And then everything works perfectly, because it's a balance. Everybody is not a manager. Everybody's not a collector. So you're good at those things, you do those things. Whatever you're good at, do that. And if we only look at, you know, the prestige and all that kind of thing, then we're always going to have a problem. Because even you, there, then you have Lord Brahma, right? You have to, now that's prestige. You know, or King Indra. You know, or at least, you know, emperor of the whole planet, you know, all the seven islands and the seven seas. Right? So that means you get the, you know, the pirates along with it. Right? Does that make sense? Yeah. So that's what you're trying to... So that's there. Otherwise, then what's the big deal? In our little area, then this is prestigious, but it just keeps going down. We saw in Kali Yuga, it gets smaller and smaller. He said there's millions of these little kings. Millions of them. Right now, I think there's what? 150, 180 countries? 200 countries? How many is it now? 174, okay. Because there was 150, you know, like 10, 15 years ago. So it's a few more. Yeah, it divides up. So, you know, and they may have a few of their guys. So where are these millions? So it's just going to be so fragmented. You know? You know, you have your little swamp and that, you know, you're the king of the swamp. You know? It's like, yeah. Or the billabong. Or
it's a flag.
Ba, ba.
King from China.
Yes, yes. Imported, imported. It's like that. We made an order on Alibaba, and then they sent this guy. Yes. Thank you for coming. Okay, so we'll end here. It has nothing to do with you walking in, we're ending and all that. So. Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Jai Śrīla Prabhupāda ki, Samaveta Bhaktivedanta ki, Jai Nitai Gaura Prema Bhakti.